name is Artie. I'm an addict. I am a proud and participating member of the Promises Freedom Group in the Baltimore area of Narcotics Anonymous. We are a 12-step, 12-tradition, and 12-concept meeting. And if you're ever in Baltimore on a Monday or a Wednesday, we meet from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Stop on by. I'd like to thank the committee for giving me yet another opportunity to serve. I also need to ask all of you a question. Do you really realize this is a traditions meeting? I don't want nobody to be misled, because when they gave me the topic, they told me traditions 10, 11, and 12, fine. I got here and I'm looking through the program and I can't find traditions nowhere in there. So I go back to the table and they say, yeah, it's 3 o'clock, practicing anonymity. And it's like, that's a real dopamine move. You're gonna trick some people into finding out about it. So that's why I needed to ask that question. In my early recovery, there was a gentleman who is still around here now who is a predecessor of mine and a dear friend by the name of Harold P., who made a statement that everybody should have a favorite tradition. And at the time, it didn't make any sense because I got clean in 88, and in 88, there were a lot of people talking about the steps are for the individual and traditions are for the group, which gives me fine justification as fuck the traditions, I'll just work the steps. Through sponsorship, I found out that if a group is made up of individuals and none of the individuals are following the traditions, what is the group doing? So I started to spend some time with this sponsor, learning about the traditions, getting involved with service, and found out that traditions are not only for the individual, but they are something that can be practiced outside of meetings. That just like the steps are practiced in all our affairs, traditions should be too. And so my message about traditions has not always been on the group level, but on the individual level. And when I discovered that, I found my favorite tradition. My favorite tradition is the 10th tradition. And the 10th tradition states, and I quote, Narcotics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the NA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. The message for me of the 10th tradition is, mind your own damn business. Cut and dried. Now, as a fellowship, and as a fellowship of the dregs of society, it makes real good sense for us to mind our business. Because there are too many people trying to find a way to cut us off at the knees anyway. There are too many people that have been harmed, and I'm talking about harmed deeply, that haven't healed from it, that want to retaliate. But as an individual, how do I do this? And as an individual, what I found out is another predecessor told me that, Artie, if you spend 6 months minding your business and 6 months leaving everybody else's alone, you might get a year clean. And I'm talking about being in Narcotics Anonymous when it was young, at least in my area, and addicts went to meetings, everybody knew each other, but there was this underground society of cliques. You know, there was the fly guy and fly girl cliques. There was the book thumper cliques. There you go with that damn book again. There was the meetings are okay, but where's the next dance clique? And it was these subdivisions. And me and a couple of the guys that I came around with, we decided we were going to start our own clique. And we named it the No Click Click. And what that allowed us to do was keep the focus on us. What it allowed us to do by keeping the focus on us, we didn't create any enemies. People didn't like character assassinate us as much. And it's not that you won't get character assassinated in Narcotics Anonymous, you will. Because if you look at the nature of a totally self-centered, egotistical megalomaniac with an inferiority complex, you're going to get talked about no matter what you do. But what I began to find out is by learning to mind my own business, I was able to get along with other people. See, I know that like the 12 steps in Narcotics Anonymous allow me to live with myself. 12 traditions allow me to live with other people. When I practice these principles to the best of my ability, it allows me to live life on life's terms. Translation, 12 steps keep me from committing suicide. 12 traditions keep me from committing homicide. And if I can practice that, I can live and be reasonably happy. And part of being happy is stop sticking your nose in shit you haven't been invited into. You sponsoring somebody and they in a relationship, you don't sponsor the relationship. Your best friend wants to do something unscrupulous and you know it's unscrupulous, but they haven't brought it to you. It ain't none of your business, Artie. Because if you do that, maybe when they decide they need some help, they don't feel as though they've been judged and they can come to you for the help. Maybe they don't care. You ever meet anybody that carries a hidden resentment? They pissed off as hell at you, but they ain't never told you about it. They'll still speak to you, but they act indifferent. Somebody will tell you something they said about you, and it's, no, I can't believe that. They wouldn't have said that. I was just with them just the other day. And by practicing this tradition, it allows me to, like, not get caught up in that. And more importantly, what I found out is in the work world, you really need a 10th tradition. You really need to be able to, like, stay out of issues that have no affairs with you if you want to keep your job. You got to be able to understand that, like, they work under a whole different set of guidelines, that there are politics involved. There is allegiances and alliances involved. And I'm a fairly simple guy. I don't need all that crap. So maybe if I sort of like stay out of a lot of stuff, I don't get caught up in stuff that I don't want to be involved in. I'm not forced into a position where I got to make a decision about something that really has no bearing on me, but I won't be able to sleep later on tonight because that decision had a major impact on somebody else, and it's because I couldn't keep my damn mouth shut. That I just might want to understand that in these alliances and allegiances, everybody doesn't wear a badge with saying who they're allied with. So if I'm talking about somebody who they're allied with, they go back to them and it happens to be someone in a supervisory position, I end up in a hostile work environment and trying to figure out what happened. What did I do wrong? What I did wrong is not honor the contract that I originally signed when I came to the job was just perform your duties, punch the clock, and go to hell on home. Don't get caught up into the gossip. Don't get caught up into the politics that have nothing to do with your job and your job performance. And when you do, Narcotics Anonymous has taught me how to stand on my own merits. That when I talk to them, I don't need to bring a whole lot of people into it. I just need to bring me and show them my merits. If they see it as it is, fine. If they don't, practice some acceptance, call your sponsor. And what that allows me to do is get by because I don't know about any of y'all. I've been here 21 years. I got a working knowledge of the 12 steps, 12 traditions, 12 concepts, and I still fit the liturgy. I'm fucked up on a lot of given days. On a lot of given days, I make bad, I mean bad decisions. On a lot of given days, I'm not in denial, I'm not practicing refusal, I am practicing absolute refusal. Fuck it, I'm gonna do what I wanna do. And so as a result of that, I got enough on my own plate with my stuff without me bringing yours or anybody else's into it, family members included. Because it's amazing as to how an individual, speaking about myself, will get clean, and because I'm involved with a fellowship that is based upon spiritual principles, I want to go back to the family and dictate to them how they should be living their lives and conducting family affairs. Forgetting the fact that, like, you were the unmanageable motherfucker that, like, all you could do was put drugs in you. You couldn't keep a roof over your head. You had a little Debbie and little Hug diet, you know, and stuff like that. And now you want to come in here and tell us how to manage family affairs? And what I've really come to understand is, like, family is important. You people are very important, but family is also important. There has to be a balance. As much as all of y'all love me, the only people I'm guaranteed that will pay for my coffin and my funeral is my family. They're the only ones I'm guaranteed. I'm not saying y'all won't do it, but they're the ones I know they will do it. Whether it's out of ego, pride, social status, they're forced into it, or they may want to do it just because I was part of the family, but I know they will do it. That when certain things happen, there's certain problems you can't bring to the fellowship, because that's not the fellowship's purpose. But you find yourself going back to family. So how do you go back to family if you've been the busybody in the family trying to tell everybody how to live and what they ought to be doing, and now you've got to come Mr. Know-It-All and ask them for help? I don't know about y'all. I ain't going to do it because my pride wouldn't let me do it. How am I going to be in that position and then have to go say, look, can you please help me? I can't do that. I can't do it. I'm honest with myself that I can't do it. So that's why I still come here. And as a result of being able to do that, what begins to happen is it's a lot easier to do some things, such as, you ever be early in recovery and anything that happens to people you know or in the meeting, you take it personally? Not the self-centered, that's my meeting, but how dare they do that in the meeting that I attend? Not understanding that everybody has to go through their growth process just like you do. And as a result of this tradition, I don't take that stuff as personally. So I'm able to go outside on the job and not take things as personal. December this year, the institution that I work at decided that they were going to give gift certificates to all the employees. Thought it was a magnanimous gesture until I got the envelope that the gift certificate was in with the letter, and I read the letter, and it's talking about, we appreciate your service and all that you've done, and everybody here contributes to the system as a whole, and this is the manager's way of saying thank you. However, due to the financial state of the organization, there will not be any raises for at least the next 3-4 years. I said, them motherfuckers. You could have kept this $100 gift certificate. You know, do something that'll give me a raise so I can keep up with the cost of living, which happens anyway. Now, I could have went into a whole lot of they don't appreciate us, got with the negativity committee on the job and started talking about them, but it was like basically I went back to my office, did what I had to do, went home, looked at the certificate, looked at the letter, If I hold on to this, I'm going to piss myself off. So I gave it away to somebody. So that way it's out of my possession. It's out of my mind, out of sight, out of mind. And this is April, and I'm still hearing people on the job talking about that bullshit gift certificate they gave us. But these are people, I've been on my job 16 years. These are people that have been there 20 and 30 years, and they still ain't caught on to the fact that, like, at the institution right next door, every Thanksgiving, they give their employees a turkey, and every Thanksgiving, we are told, you got to work this holiday. So what do you expect? When I spend time to mind my business, I find out I'm in tune with what's going on around me. And if I'm in tune with what's going on around me, I have the ability to respond rather than react to a circumstance or situation. Our 11th tradition says that our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And the message for me from that tradition is, I can show you better than I can tell you. That based upon how I conduct myself, based upon the type of life that I'm leading, based upon how I treat people, based upon how people treat me, that's the attraction. If you're somebody that walks into the meeting and you hear a whole bunch of people going, pss, pss, and then all of a sudden it stops, you are not an attraction. If you're the type of individual that, like, you are the topic of men's and women's rap consistently, you are not an attraction. But if you're the type of individual that, like, people smile when they see you, people are happy to see you, people that you can't even remember their name, but they remember your name, that's an attraction. And as a result of being an attraction, people begin to understand the only reason you're an attraction is because of the place that you're affiliated with here. And because of your affiliation here, you have done some things in your life that makes you attractive to other people. And that attraction is something that isn't strictly amongst the fellowship. Because one of the things is, if you truly understand anonymity, you understand that nobody has the right to break anybody else's anonymity except for that individual. Now, those of us that understand that and practice it, we are able to go outside of this arena, just be a participant in whatever it is, and nobody knows about us being in Narcotics Anonymous. It's none of their damn business. As a result of that, when you decide to break your anonymity, you start seeing jaws drop to the floor. Because they look at you and you're telling them about, yeah, I'm the joker that used to rob people, steal, pump a substance into my body like a madman because I had an unconscious suicide wish, that I couldn't be trusted, not even by myself. Yeah, I'm that joker. And they look at, well, you perform so well here. You're such a kind individual. And you are able to speak so eloquently. All those type people always just using four-letter words all the time, and they have no vocabulary. Yeah, well, I was one of them. And as a result of that, some typical questions come up. The first one is, what happened? How did you change? Well, I decided enough was enough, and I joined Narcotics Anonymous, and I decided my life needed to change. And from being in Narcotics Anonymous, my life has changed. You mean those people that stand out there on Green Mountain Avenue that block traffic all day long whenever they have those damn meetings? Yeah, those people, but you got to understand that, like, recovery is just like anything else. It comes in time, it comes in degrees, some are better than others, and it's all a learning process. The same way that you come to a job and you come in on an entry level, you don't know a whole lot. You don't know what you're supposed to be doing. You don't know who's who. But if you have some consistency, that is our keep coming back process, you begin to learn those things and you start moving up the corporate ladder because you acquire some abilities, some skills, and you've learned how to cope rather than cop. And because you've learned how to do that sort of stuff, you begin to show the inner person, and that inner person was made by God, and God don't make junk. So given the opportunity, anybody, everybody can be the attraction. But in order to become an attraction, you got to know what's attractive. And in order to know what's attractive, you got to be honest. And I don't mean that type of honesty where you're making the confession because you know you already caught. I'm talking about the honesty where you sit down with yourself, tell yourself the truth about yourself for yourself, and then you realize, I don't know a goddamn thing. So just maybe, instead of me having some bright ideas, I might want to ask somebody. And what I'm referring to is like there seems to be a thing going on. And I'm not just talking about in my area, because I get a chance to travel and go places. And when I go places, I want to go out and see what it's like there. I talk to people. I want to see, take me to the hood. Let me see what recovery is like in the hood. And what I've been noticing is that there's this thing where it's like people with like 15, 20, 30 years, nobody wants to ask them shit. Nobody wants to know how things are done. And as a result of that, nobody knows history. And if you don't know the history, then how can you appreciate where you at? If you don't know the history, such as like in the very early days of Narcotics Anonymous, here on the East Coast, they had the Rockefeller Act, which said that if you had been convicted of a narcotics felony and you were under the same roof, which means you dope fiends can be on this floor, I can be downstairs, that everybody in that room can be now rearrested and charged with felony conspiracy. Then you go out to the West Coast where this thing started. They had this thing called secret indictments where the attorney goes in there in front of a judge. There is no defense. There is no speaking for the person whose name is on that secret indictment. And it's only one side of the story told, and the judge says, okay, and they just go out there, pick you up, and lock your ass up. Now, if you think about that, you gotta ask yourself, how did we make it to now? With those type of odds going against us, how do we make it till now? That further part of the history was a lot of times when you want to start a meeting, you go to a church, you go to a recreation center, you go to some social club and ask them about, can we have some space to start a meeting? How about in the early days, a lot of people had to go to the precinct and ask the captain's permission to be able to start a meeting because addicts weren't trusted. So how do we get here? How do we get here where we can get the biggest facility in a city and meet openly to carry the message of recovery? We became an attraction. Now, please don't misunderstand the last part of this tradition where it talks about that personal anonymity has to be maintained at a level of press, radio, and film. Narcotics Anonymous, though it started out basically as a secret society, is no longer a secret society. However, due to interpretation, due to personality, you should maintain personal anonymity because it'll be assumed by not just people outside of NA, but also people inside of NA, that since you're the one up there in the spotlight, you represent Narcotics Anonymous. And if you're an addict, like I'm an addict, you have some seven-step experience that lets you know I'm capable of anything at any time. So I'm not your representative. Don't want to be your representative. But as an individual, I need to understand that this thing is too sacred, too precious, too valuable for me to take the chance of doing something, even unintentionally, that can bring harm to Narcotics Anonymous. Because to paraphrase a statement made by a famous American, I have grown to the point where I understand it's not what Narcotics Anonymous can do for me, it's what I can do for Narcotics Anonymous. Because if you understand the paradox of you got to only keep what you have by giving it away, you understand that the more that I do stuff for Narcotics Anonymous, the more I end up receiving. And as a result of receiving, not only do I get another day clean, I begin to experience some things like contentment. I begin to experience self-fulfillment. I begin to experience not just self-esteem, how about self-respect? You ever go to bed at night and the pillow starts talking to you about you dirty, low-down, rotten, motherfucking despicable? You ever go to bed and experience that? When you start developing self-respect, that pillow don't talk to you as much like that. When you start developing self-respect, you have the ability to tell you no. That's a bad idea. My integrity is worth too much for me to be fucking with them and fucking with that. That I spent some time acquiring what I have, not just materially, but internally, and that stuff is of real value to me. So I need to tell me no. Even though it sounds really good. And more importantly, it's not so much that it sounds good, but if you're an addict like I am, sometimes you just want to do some shit because you want that charge to know you got away with it just one more time. I got away with it. They didn't know. I still got it. So you got to be careful with that. Our 12th tradition talks about anonymity. It's the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And what that means is that I need to be fully aware of, I need to respect y'all. And in order to respect y'all, I not only need to know about the program of Narcotics Anonymous, it might be a good idea to know something about the disease of addiction. Because what I've come to understand, personalities, principles before personality means that I need to be able to look past you and your behavior and see what's driving you to do what you do at that moment, no matter how displeasing it is to me. And if I end up seeing the disease of addiction, then my empathy, compassion, patience, tolerance, acceptance, and understanding need to happen. And if that begins to happen, what begins to happen is the therapeutic value of one addict helping another starts happening within the meetings. That I no longer, after the meeting, technology is a bitch sometimes. At one time when the phone used to ring, people used to just pick it up, say hello, and deal with whoever you're talking to. These days, caller ID, phone call display on cell phones, you look at your phone, oh, I ain't fucking with them. She's too long-winded. He ain't about shit and ain't got no problem. Fuck him. Oh, no, not that waste of breath, nigga. And at one point, all of us were all those things to somebody else. At one point, all of us was not the person that we are at this moment. So if I understand principles before personalities, I got to be able to look past you, your behavior, and what you're doing, and see what's driving you. And guess what? Sometimes it ain't always just the disease of addiction. Feelings, as they used to say, is what I have the most of and have the least about, know the least about. Sometimes I be hurting. And because I'm hurting, I am going to react. and that reaction may not be socially acceptable for the forum in which I am in. But it's either I react or there will be a reaction. And that reaction is when we start stuffing shit, stuffing it. And no matter how much you stuff into anything, eventually when it becomes full and nothing else can get into it, and you try to stuff some more, there's an explosion. And that explosion has caused people to use. That explosion has caused people who have so-called time that we think went back out to use, they were actually just trying to commit suicide because the pain had gotten that great. What better way for an addict to go out finally than an overdose? It ain't always about they made a conscious decision to use. Look at what goes on in your life and your feelings and how you get so jammed up and jumbled up you don't know what the fuck to do. And if you had to understand this disease and realize that there is no cure, that not only is there not a cure, but this disease adapts. It gets better at trying to trick you than you get better in staying clean on a consistent basis. So if I'm dealing with something like that, it isn't always what it looks like on the surface. That's why in our step process, we got to go below the surface. Dig deep, searching, fearless moral inventory. Continued to take inventory. Sought through prayer and you got to keep digging and dig deep. And if you're practicing this tradition, you begin to start looking deep. And you begin to understand. You may not always agree, but you begin to understand. They're just doing the best they can with what they have to work with. Some of us have more to work with than others. And if I can do this on an individual level, and somebody said it in the meeting before, people are always watching you. Newcomers emulate what they see in-betweeners and old-timers do. If I can practice this and somebody's watching me and they begin to mimic, practice, whatever you want to call it, what I'm doing, that's two. You only need two addicts to have a meeting. And if two do it and two people are watching them, that's four, and it keeps growing and it keeps growing, and then we're able to continue to preserve this life-saving message in Narcotics Anonymous. Thanks for allowing me to share.
To introduce our second speaker, Louise M. from the Tri-County area.
Hi everybody, I'm an addict. My name's Louise.
Hey, Louise.
And like Elisa said, I'm from the Tri-County area. I think it's the southernmost area in our region. We are part of the Chesapeake and Potomac region. My home group is Thursday Night Chapter Go Under the Stars. When the weather permits, we actually do meet under the stars, and it's a wonderful, wonderful meeting. My favorite tradition, I want to thank you too, Artie, for sharing, and you mentioned your favorite tradition. Mine is the fourth, that we can meet under the stars if we want. Every group is autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or any as a whole, and we're not hurting anybody by meeting outside. That was the first tradition that I learned I could apply it. I learned something from it. For years I was told I had to not use. My family courts, everybody was telling me I couldn't use drugs anymore. And not only did I not want to not use, I didn't know how to not use. And this last time around when I came in, and you were just taken, when you told me I couldn't use, you might as well have taken my life. And this time around, after my miracle happened, and I won't get into that right now, but my miracle happened, and when I came in this time, instead of hearing you guys tell me what I can't do, what I heard is, Louise, when you use, you hurt yourself and you hurt other people. So let's try to set a boundary up for you. And outside that boundary is use and steal and lie and con and all that stuff we do out there. Inside this boundary, though, you can get as creative as you want. And through the concept of learning what the fourth tradition meant for groups, it helped me learn to apply that to myself. I want to thank Alicia for chairing, thank Artie for sharing a beautiful message. When Rashima called me and asked me if I would share, and if I was coming to the convention, which I was, then she said, how do you feel about sharing on a tradition? And I was like, I'm honored. In fact, the first tradition I ever shared on was the 10th tradition. It's at Tri-County, Start to Live, up in Tri-County, Pittsburgh region. And she said, wow, really? That's great, because everybody I'm calling to ask to see if they can share doesn't want to speak on a tradition. And I remember thinking, that doesn't make sense to me. Then I thought, they should probably are glad I'm not on that programming committee, because if you don't want to speak on a tradition, what that tells me is, one, either you don't have experience and understanding of it, or two, it's not popular, and you want to speak on a more popular topic. And I just remembered feeling real grateful. I don't have to really judge anybody else's program or anything, but I wouldn't be here without, we wouldn't be here without the traditions. Unity is a must. The whole principle behind anonymity is to protect our unity. Where and when I got clean, and Artie had talked a lot about understanding our history, I can only share my story. It's all I got. I can't change my history. Where and when I got clean in the Pittsburgh area, first, it was around this 78, 79. In and out, managed to stay in for about a year against the wall. You know how we do that? And then, but I was miserable. I was clean and dry, but miserable. And I tried a geographic cure, moved to the state of Colorado. Where and when I was clean in Pittsburgh at first, there was less than a handful of any meetings. And there were the AA meetings that we hijacked. When I moved to Colorado, where I was there, there were no NA meetings. I went to meetings in the other fellowship, and they weren't the same. And within 3 months, I was back out. A year and a half. The law caught up with me, not only from Colorado, but from PA, where I had two felonies I was still on probation for. But my miracle happened. And when I came, I was in an institution. The law caught up with me, and I was in an institution for 20 months. And when I got out of that institution, I knew personally where I needed to be. And that was in meetings. Again, where and when I got clean, there was no NA meetings. And I'm very grateful. I was welcomed into the original fellowship for the addict that I am. And there, they stressed the first tradition to me more than they first stressed the first step. And maybe because I was an addict, as soon as I sat down, they said, look, our life depends on our primary purpose, which is to help the still suffering. So you know, if you want to try this on your own, go right ahead. And I'd done it already. My miracle had happened. I was beat. I came in and it was like, but if you're willing to do what we do and be a part of, we bet you this will work for you too. We don't even bet, we know. So they stress the traditions hugely. And so my whole time in recovery, the traditions are so near and dear to my heart. The 10th tradition, where NA as such has no opinion on outside issues, hence the NA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. As already said, you know, our steps are for our personal recovery. The traditions are more a guide for the group. The concepts are more a guide for those of us involved in levels of service where we deal with the business of NA. Not personal recovery, not carrying the message, but the business of NA. You know, let's write books and publish them and sell them, that kind of business stuff, which is another beast sometimes. But, you know, we have all this great literature now. I mean, we have a 12, we have It Works, How, and Why, which breaks down the 12 steps, it breaks down the 12 traditions. Those crazy guys down in the Lone Star region in Texas wrote a 12 tradition guide, which never got voted in, but I think now in our literature process, they're talking about it again. There's a lot of literature out there that you can read, and I don't want to just kind of regurgitate what's out there. Because again, the traditions for me come alive when I learn about them through my own personal experience. And a lot of, or someone close to me's personal experience. And a lot of us learn about the traditions through violating them and getting taught. I mean, we don't come in knowing this stuff. We come in self-centered, scared, like, you know, lost. At least that's how I came in. The 10th tradition came to life for me when I don't remember how long I'd been clean. I was a single mom with two kids, came home from work one day. Our president at the time's wife was on this crusade to just say no. Like, this'll work. Ha! You know, it wasn't working for me. It didn't work for me. But she was hell-bent on this crusade. And she wanted to bestow upon Narcotics Anonymous an award. And Narcotics Anonymous, of which I'm not a spokesperson for, like Artie said, none of us are, but somewhere up in whoever, you know, level, politely, respectfully declined. We don't accept awards. We're not here for any kind of award. But basically it was, we also are not affiliated with anything. Later on in her crusade, she went on a raid of a crack house. And I came home from work this one day and smeared on the front page of both of the Pittsburgh newspapers and on the headline of all three of the major news stations on television was her quote when she walked in there with this SWAT team, "These people are hopeless." I'm so grateful for our 10th tradition that we're not affiliated with that kind of mentality. You guys taught me that as long as there's a pulse, there's hope. And I've seen it. I've seen it. I was written off by everyone. And I came in here and you guys breathed life into my broken spirit. I also learned early on, before this whole experience, I just got out of an institution, right? I didn't know what and was up. All I did was I dove into work. I had like 3 jobs. I'm zipping around, you know, trying to make time. All I did was work meetings, work meetings, work meetings. And then I hooked up with a guy very quick. I didn't take suggestion too well back then, right? I'm a woman in recovery. When I was using out there, and I'm just out there, I didn't have a period for years. My body was so screwed up. Came in recovery, still didn't have a period for years, and then boom, one day I'm pregnant. I mean, that's my experience. I'd had an abortion when I was using. Here I was, barely, I mean, just out of this institution. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't really know this guy. And here I am pregnant. And I had sworn the last time I was never going to have another abortion. And here I was faced with, okay, I swore I wasn't going to have an abortion, but am I really equipped to commit to the responsibility of a child? I was petrified just to live, let alone anything much more than the basics. And I am grateful for this tradition again, because I got to share this decision. I mean, all I knew was what I was taught was whatever's going on in your life, go into meetings and talk about it. And you'll find someone there that has experience that can help you. And I went in meetings and I talked about it. And because of this tradition, I believe the people that were in those meetings listening to me, even if they were morally against abortion, didn't push that on me in the meeting. We have no opinion on that. But yet, sometimes as members, we have to deal with issues like this, medication and recovery, all over the place. I mean, there's a million topics like this that as a fellowship, we have no opinion on. As members, we might have experience we can share with each other, but we refrain from giving advice. I can't tell you what to do, right? I can share with you what works for me. That's what my sponsors still do for me. I can't tell you what to do. I can share with you what works for me. The choice is yours. Recovery is all about choice now. And my sponsors allowed me the process of learning how to grow up and start making some of my own choices for the first time in my life. Make a decision, Louise. I had to make a decision. And it was petrifying. But again, so what the spirit of the 10 steps says to me, and you know, already touched on this, and again, this is something that I take it as a personal, you know, when I came in, when I was out there, I wasn't just an addict, I was a good addict. And when I came in here and I made a decision I wanted to be a member, you know what, I don't want to just be a member, I want to be a good member. I'm proud to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. Narcotics Anonymous daily saves my life. I want to be a good member. So again, what's that mean? And what my predecessors taught me is that means it's all about unity. Get out of your self-centeredness. It's not all about me anymore. It's about this program saves our lives. Without this program, we're all going to, our ship's going to perish, right? And our members will die. And not only our members, the addicts out there who haven't even had a chance to taste this won't ever get it. So it's real important for me to keep in mind that sometimes I don't even have to be standing up in a podium where we're getting recorded and all that crap. It might be where I'm at my home group and there's a couple newcomers from the rehab around the corner. And if I say something as a member that they saw pick up a key tag 2 weeks ago, they're going to think I'm speaking as the voice of Narcotics Anonymous because they don't know yet. Nobody does that. My husband has been very involved in service at all kinds of different levels. He got a letter once, I can't remember from where, to the president of Narcotics Anonymous. Because people don't, you know, people outside don't understand, let alone even newcomers. And sometimes, you know, I just was talking to a woman in my area who I was surprised. She was all excited about a new meeting we're going to have. And she said something like, and this facility's available for functions, and we could even have area service, because we're a hugely geographic area with a very smaller population. And our areas are real spread out, and this area is kind of central to the three counties that we encompass. And she said, we can even have area service there, and we won't even have to pay them rent. And it's like, whoa, seventh tradition, yeah. We do have to pay rent, you know. I think it's in our fifth tradition, the price is too high when we don't adhere to our traditions. The 11th tradition, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of pressure in our field. And again, I'm going to try to piggyback off of what already have talked about and a lot of this stuff. I don't want to regurgitate, you know, and stuff. But in one of our pieces of literature, it talks about, so if our public relations policy is about attraction rather than promotion, it means we have to have a policy. What is our policy? And if you're interested in getting involved in how we do present as Narcotics Anonymous to the public, to courts, to treatment centers or whatever, to just to commercials in the middle of the night, we have a subcommittee for that called Public Information. If you're interested in getting involved, I'm sure they can use your help. I'm really sure they can use your help in no matter what area or region you're in. It's real important too for us to recognize as members, again, I want to be a good member. I have a responsibility. And a lot of us graduate from maybe some programs out there, and sometimes they invite us back to share as an alumni. If I'm going in and sharing a Narcotics Anonymous message as an alumni, not involved through PI, what am I really doing? Am I contributing to the unity of Narcotics Anonymous? That's just a question I would ask myself. We come in, we get clean, we experience this miracle, and we want to help. Sometimes everybody. We want to help. We were saved from death, and we want to help. But our subcommittees are set up, our structure is set up so that we can help most effectively. And also, not just help most effectively, but help, like Ari was talking about, we have a seventh step. Help so that our egos don't get in the way. The second portion of this, I really feel strongly about, but I also feel like we're a little out of date. Again, when this tradition was written, and I'm going to go back up on the 10th tradition too, real quick. Let me fill that in. One of the reasons the 10th tradition, if not just our history, our predecessor's history, they allowed us to adopt these 12 traditions as written, pretty much as written. The steps, same thing. We just added we in front of all of them and changed alcohol to addicts or addiction. The 10th tradition, if you look at our predecessors, what they learned from them was that when they had an opinion, they were doing fine. They were cruising along. They had something going that was helping these hopeless people. But when they got involved with politics, having opinions on abolition, prohibition, they folded. They folded. So when these traditions were formulated, they said, that's a point we need to be very careful and watch for. Actually, the whole concept of anonymity, when they were originally, Artie was talking about how did we as a bunch of drug addicts unable to even meet in the same space without it being illegal, back when, 1930s, there was nothing for people like us. We died on the street, or we were like thrown into solariums, they called them. Part of the reason they were anonymous and stressed anonymity was if word got out, and not that they didn't want word to get out, they did want word to get out, but if the word got out too fast, they would have been flooded and they wouldn't have been able to handle it. And again, this is history, like I didn't know, and sometimes like some of our histories, some of it's kind of hard to swallow sometimes. It's like, that kind of makes me think a little bit. Thank God we don't have that problem today. We're strong. We're real strong. I remember when we weren't. I remember in an area where there was no Narcotics Anonymous, and I pray I never forget. That's why I keep coming. Okay, so we must always maintain personal anonymity, back to 11, at the level of press, radio, and films. Press, radio, and films was all we had back then, right? television, movies, anything like that. Press, newspapers, books, blah, blah, blah. Radio, the voice over the airways. What about the internet? That wasn't even a dream back then. And I met my husband via a Narcotics Anonymous online chat room. I'm serious. And I'm very involved in online recovery. I stay in touch with people all over the world via that electronic media. There's some social sites out there where we can post stuff, we can blog, we can do all kinds of stuff. And the spirit of this tradition for me tells me that if I'm putting something out there in cyberland that can be viewed by anyone, I need to maintain my personal anonymity, which means I don't, with my full name, profess to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. Again, keeping in mind the spirit of all our traditions, the 10th tradition. I'm not even going to say shit that might get people to think I'm, who aren't in recovery, think I'm some kind of spokesperson if they don't understand the whole concept. So where and when I do share about my personal recovery, it's always on sites that can only be viewed by either others in recovery or people, my family, people who are personal friends of mine who know, who get it, who understand. But we don't really address that enough, I think. Now, this is something that I think as a fellowship we need to address because I see it. I see it all over the place. One of the things I've learned, I'm guessing I'm mellowing in my old age, is I'm learning to pick my battles a little bit. Where and when I got clean again, the traditions were stressed. When I moved back to the Pittsburgh area and where I spent a majority of my clean time, the traditions were stressed. And then I moved down to Southern Maryland and things are a little different. And it's, I don't want to say a younger fellowship because there are a handful of people with a lot of time down there, but it was just different. And when I started to address tradition violations, as I saw happening, outside events being announced during meetings and such like that. One of the things that I'd been taught, because this was how it was done for us when we were younger, was it was addressed during the meeting. And so that's how I was dealing with it down there. And one of the things that I think I've learned, and I'm trying to be open, and trying to, again, how can I be an effective member? Is that maybe instead of addressing it during the meeting, maybe I can just pull that person aside after the meeting. You know, and my argument for that was in the past, but then whoever heard it or was influenced by it doesn't recognize how it's not what we do, not what's suggested. But I'm trying to learn to pick my battles because I don't want to drive anybody out the door either. First and foremost, it's about not driving anybody out the door, being an attraction. So I guess that leads to the 12th tradition. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Again, and you guys model this for me, and all I can hope to do is to model and share back what you guys have modeled and shared for me and what I continue to learn. How can I take this knowledge that I continue to learn in my recovery and apply it? One of my things my husband always says is like acceptance. Like, what's that look like? What's that look like? What's that mean? Because we don't know. We don't know coming in. Principles before personalities. I'll tell you what. I love the concept of anonymity. It levels the playing field. My one home group in Pittsburgh, Sharpsburg group, we had a member who, and this was back when, we're still throwing bucks in the basket. I mean, the economy's changed so much, we're still throwing bucks in the basket. And back when he had a good job, he wore a suit, he'd throw $2 in. When Group Conscious came around, he thought he should get 2 votes. He threw $2 in. His vote should weigh more. It's like, then, you know, it doesn't work like that. It levels the playing field. This disease surely doesn't discriminate. In recovery, we can't afford it. Our diversity is our strength, you know? When we, you know, and I love the spirit. You know, four is my favorite tradition. Two is right there. A loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. When we're in our group conscience, if we don't sit in right with something that's going on, but we don't say it, this God, whatever, is this power, might not have a chance to be expressing, because maybe it's supposed to be expression through you. You know? Again, the 10th tradition doesn't mean that we're opinionless as members. It's just we have to guard against making sure that when we do express our opinions, you know, what we believe today, it's not construed as what NA believes. I for a while, I thought our 11th tradition should be required reading for anybody over 5 years. Because again, especially when it comes to the issue of religion, it can be a really, really sensitive subject. I mean, I go so far as you shouldn't be in a meeting and hear someone root for a football team. Because that guy sitting on the other side might not root for that team. And there's no saying what'll drive an addict that wants to go back out. And it might be as simple as something as that's his team, and I hate that team. See ya. And again, that might be an extreme example, but is that an attraction? Would that be an attraction? And again, half of us might think that's a joke, or we're just jagging around, playing around. But the bottom line is, 100 people might think you're jagging around, and there's going to be that one addict who's ready to, he's on the fence. How many of us have been on the fence? And if there's something we could be doing or not doing that's going to pull them on our side of the fence, man, I think we owe it to Narcotics Anonymous to do it. So that's how I kind of approach the traditions. I try to remain teachable. Because again, like I said, I was pulling up people during meetings when they would violate traditions. And I'm learning, you know, maybe it's better just pull them aside after. I try to stay teachable. I want to thank so much Lisa again, Artie again, the programming committee, the whole host committee for CPRCNA, and each of you for saving my life every day. Thanks. Okay.